I'm joined here today by Dr. Harry Hagopian, and of course we're still looking at the Pope's visit to the Holy Land. Now, we reflected fairly soon after the Yad Vashem address. Let's talk about his visits to Israel, Palestine, Nazareth. Let's go through those. Pick out for me, if you would, Harry, a few highlights there and your opinions on those visits.
Well, some of the main highlights, I think, for the listeners and viewers, as well as for the Christians and members of the other faith communities within Israel and Palestine, were the Pope's visit to Bethlehem, and particularly the Mass that he held in Manger Square opposite the Church of the Nativity, as well as the visit to the Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem. I think those were quite fundamental and quite important in terms of underlying the importance of the local Palestinian Christian constituency that the Pope also met. The other stations during the visit included a visit to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is the Church of the Resurrection, and it is fitting, I think, that that visit was almost at the end of his trip today, just before he got ready to leave and go back home to Rome. And also, at the same time, two things happened this morning. One was a meeting of all the Christian church leaders of the different churches at the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate, and also a visit to the Armenian Patriarchate and a meeting with the Armenian Patriarch and the bishops in the church itself at St. James, which is in the Armenian Quarter in the Old City of Jerusalem. Altogether, I think what struck me is, as I was getting ready for this conversation with you, James, I was looking at the program once again. And the program is very, very similar to the one that Pope John Paul II followed in the year 2000. Some of the meetings are almost carbon copies of that program. And that's inevitable, actually, because we are talking of a 2,000-year history of Christianity in the region, and in 9 years, things aren't going to change so much for the program to change drastically. But it also shows that things are so slow in the region that you kind of expect the Pope to go through the various stations that his predecessor went through. One thing that was immensely important, as far as I'm concerned, was the fact that the Pope visited Nazareth, met with the ordinaries and the population, the Arab-Israeli Christian population and other religious communities in Nazareth, where he also prayed at the Church of the Annunciation and had a meeting, a political meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Nazareth as well. To me, what has struck me most during this pilgrimage, other than what I said in an earlier conversation you and I had, that to me the most important mandate of the Pope is lifting up the presence and witness of the Christian communities in the Holy Land. And by communities, I don't only mean Catholic, I mean all the Christian communities. But what struck me is the fact that here is a man who is very different from all other men visiting the region. And the reason why it is so is because this man, Pope Benedict XVI, actually represents two things. He represents the political aspect of being the head of the Vatican, the Holy See, but at the same time, the head of the Catholic Church. So in the one person, you've got a top religious leader of a huge church and an influential church at that, despite the problems that we might have here and there all the time, and also a politician, because he is the head of a state, as it were. And therefore, in this man were both the political and the spiritual dimensions of the trip. So spiritually, yes, it was a pilgrimage, politically, it had meetings with the president of the Palestinian Authority, with the Israeli political leadership. And I think what resulted from all this is a forensic scrutiny by the press of every word he said, every facial expression, every handshake, which I think for an 80-plus-year-old man was quite stressful. It would be stressful for any person to be under the microscope for 8 long days. This is what happened, but I suspect that both the Pope and the Vatican knew that this would be one outcome of his pilgrimage.
Well, let's get into this, Harry. I mean, you've mentioned forensic scrutiny. I think that's a very good way of putting it. I've read the homilies. I've been moved by the homilies. I've seen the Pope building bridges, reconciliation, not ducking the fact that it's a very, very difficult situation where peace is hard to come by. But as you say, he's been criticised in some quarters, all quarters, everyone's got an agenda of not going far enough. Is that fair or not?
That is fair in the sense that, yes, everybody expected more of the Pope. And it's very, very difficult because my question would simply be to myself primarily, how long is a piece of string? How much further could he go? For instance, you and I and a lot of the readers and viewers who've either been surfing the channels or following more closely this visit to the Holy Land will have seen that in the Israel-Palestine context, there were many people who raised objections, who were unhappy with some of what he said or did not say. For instance, when we did that little instantaneous reaction to his visit to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Center in Jerusalem, and we talked about the moving way in which the Pope spoke there, there were many people, many Jewish voices, which criticized the Pope for not going, being any clearer in terms of the Nazi ideology of Germany at the time, the number of Jews that were killed, that they were murdered rather than killed. So we were basically splitting hair. The same thing happened with many Muslim voices who basically were unhappy that the Pope did not publicly apologize for his famous or infamous, as it were, Regensburg address, or some of his positions perhaps which have been misinterpreted or interpreted differently by different faith leaders, let alone, interestingly enough, James, by Christian leaders in the region and ordinary priests and representatives of churches and bishops who have basically asked the Pope to be more political, and if not more political, because understandably that's a difficult role for him to assume, a more outspoken in his analysis of what is happening to the conflict of the region.
Isn't part of the problem, though, when we use a phrase like outspoken, again, that depends on one's agenda, what one wants him to say, rather than what he feels he should say. So if he does, for instance, go down the line of being more explicit about the Holocaust and Nazi, you know, the Nazi involvement very clearly in that, or he goes further down the track of apologising for Regensburg, won't somebody then say, aha, he's on the side of the Muslims, or aha, he's on the side of the Jews? Isn't it very dangerous, actually?
Or he's not on the side of the local Christians. You're absolutely right. And this is why I think, despite what I call the forensic scrutiny, what was interesting is that the press, the world media, and the international and local media were probably waiting to see if there is going to be a major blunder. Despite some of the problems that did occur during this 8-day pilgrimage, the fact that there was a lack of satisfaction by one party or another for something that the Pope had not said or done, I think, and I thank God, that in the end there weren't any major gaffes or any major blunders that could have cast a very bad light on the whole visit. But you're absolutely right, because what you're basically saying, James, is that the Pope is bringing, or he says he's bringing, a spiritual message for peace. He's praying for peace in the Middle East. Therefore, he's basically undergirding the Ministry of Reconciliation, asking for both sides, Israelis and Palestinians, to come together to try and draw toward one another and resolve some of the issues that have prevented them over at least 60 years to come to any peaceful solution. Yet, it's very difficult to be able to achieve that when the political givens or the political realities in the region are as intransigent and as difficult and sometimes as bitter as they are. I always say when people talk about religious issues, when people talk about socioeconomic problems, I always have one analysis which some people find extremely sophisticated whilst others find extremely naive, which is that at the heart of the whole range of issues bedeviling and bearing down upon the communities, be they Jewish, Muslim or Christian in the region, is the political situation. Things cannot really move forward until the political situation has been resolved or both sides have shown the goodwill and the good faith to grapple with it. Now, the Pope touched upon some of this. He was very, very clear, in fact, very explicit in his condemnation of anti-Semitism when he arrived into Israel. He also talked about the need to create or set up a two-state solution, a sovereign Palestinian state, basically endorsing President Obama's call for a two-state solution for Israelis and Palestinians. He also talked about the wall and the ugly separation wall that separates Palestinians from Israelis. And he basically mentioned that walls that are built can come down. And that was a very good reference because it reminded me of the Berlin Wall, which years ago, who would have thought that people would chip away at it and that it would actually come down? So he did touch upon some of the stations, but he had this very difficult situation of being both a spiritual pilgrim and a political leader, with both sides exerting as much pressure as they can upon him in order to draw him to their side of the argument. And I think, despite all the problems, despite the fact that the media, particularly the international media, was so keen on pushing its own narrative forward, it's almost like the narrative was written before the Pope got there, and they wanted to subscribe faithfully to this narrative. Despite all the pitfalls and minefields that were there over the last 8 days, I think that the pilgrimage itself, I would qualify it actually as a success, or at the very least, not a failure.
Doesn't this show us part of the problem? The fact that we're looking back and we're looking back at all the good things that happened and saying, yes, it is a success, but we're measuring that on the fact that it wasn't a catastrophic failure. Does that say more about the region and more about the fact that it was mission impossible, in a sense, for the Pope to come out of it with everybody thinking, oh, that, yes, that was excellent?
It was, in a sense, a mission impossible. At the beginning, if you remember, when we started these conversations a few days ago, setting the context of the whole pilgrimage, one of the comments I made was that the omission of Gaza as one of the stations for the Pope's visit was wrong, in my opinion, because Gaza has now become very, very prominent on the map of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and there is a Christian community, be it Latin Rite Catholic or Greek Orthodox, in Gaza, and it would have been good if the Pope had visited Gaza as well, or that it had been included in his itinerary. But it's also true that it is mission impossible in the sense that both sides are so adamant and so entrenched in their own positions. And the fact that those positions haven't really budged enough over the years, that having the Pope go there and people raising expectations that he's going to produce a miracle, the man was not going to produce a miracle. I never expected him to produce a miracle. All I expected him to do is to go there, perhaps increase the good faith and the goodwill of the people, of the protagonists, let alone the local Christian communities, but ultimately be a source of solidarity with both peoples as they try to negotiate their way through to a peace solution. Now, my problem with that, James, is that at the moment, as I look at the situation, whether I look at the situation with the serious divisions within the Palestinian factions, who of your listeners or readers has not heard of the big fight going on between Hamas and Fatah, for instance, as two Palestinian main factions? Or who hasn't heard of the very hardline Israeli government that's been put together recently, which actually dismisses the two-state solution? For the Pope to find himself in the middle of such hardline positions and so much division within both camps. It was not realistic to expect him to produce anything more than he did produce. But there were such expectations, and there were people who were using this pilgrimage as a way of pushing to the utmost their own agendas and their own political expectations. I think the Pope negotiated those quite well. Please all, please none is something we all know about. Yes, perhaps he could have done more. Perhaps the Vatican fell short of some of the preparation that was necessary for the visit. Perhaps in Jerusalem, I was talking to some journalists and some friends and colleagues from the old days in Jerusalem and in Nazareth, talking about some of the security arrangements. In Jerusalem, for instance, James, the security arrangements were so tight that the whole city was in a gridlock, that people, whether foreigners or local people, couldn't move. Some of them couldn't join the Pope, some of them couldn't go to participate in some of the events he held because of the security situation. Perhaps all these are things that could have been done a bit differently. I don't know why they weren't done. I'm not privy to the inner negotiations of this particular pilgrimage. Having said that, I think by and large, the Pope's presence in the region was a way of telling the Christian communities there, we think of you, we pray for you, but at the same time telling the Jewish faith community and the Muslim faith community that we are talking with you, we are partners with you in this process. And at the end of the day, if you remember, the Pope said quite clearly that he is willing and hopeful that the Catholic Church would be able to provide whatever resources are necessary in order to help move the peace process forward. Now, whether those resources would be sufficient, whether his offer would be taken up, whether the Church of Jerusalem or the Universal Church would be able to contribute toward the resolution of the peace between the two parties, I'm not so sure about it. I just hope that he will have done something to contribute toward that move toward peace in the region.
We've looked at the interreligious dialogue. We've looked at affirmation for the Christian churches and people of the Holy Land, the living stones. We've looked at many things. There have been other visits to the Bethlehem Caritas Children's Hospital. We've heard the Pope affirming the role of women in the church. Very importantly, we've heard him talking about the family as the bedrock. Now, obviously, these things always get overshadowed, and there are these big, powerful, iconic moments like praying at the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, which echoes John Paul II back in 2000. Tell us a bit about how you felt seeing Benedict XVI praying at the wall there.
Well, it's always an emotional moment. I mean, the visual pictures that you see on your television screens are quite moving. And I think they're, in some sense, they're as moving, albeit in a different way, as the pictures were when he stood up and spoke at the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Center. I think there is some poignancy and some significance to having the leader of the Catholic Church stand up and pray and say what he said. And I actually was quite moved also by the fact that he went to the Wailing Wall. He placed that prayer in one of the cracks of the wall. And interestingly enough, I read the prayer on your website. And it's a very, very nice prayer. It's a very inclusive prayer. It's a prayer for all peoples and communities and faiths. And I think some of the readers should go back and read it, because it's almost a meditation, that prayer. So for me, that moment was an important moment. I think it was not only iconic or important, but it was also a moment that had to be included in the itinerary, because Pope John Paul II had done it in the year 2000. Imagine if this Pope had not gone to the Wailing Wall, then there would have been another flurry of speculation as to why he avoided going to the Wailing Wall, and why he avoided placing a prayer in the cracks of that wall. So I'm quite happy that he did that move, and he went there and prayed in silence for a minute, as we all saw on our television screens. I also would have liked to see more media coverage, and I'm a little bit sad that it was not allowed, because if the media had been able to cover a bit more the visit of the Pope to the Dome of the Rock, that in itself is also very important. It's the third holiest sanctuary in Islam. The fact that the Pope was welcomed there by the Muslim Mufti of Jerusalem and by the Muslim religious leaders and Christian leaders there, that also goes a long way toward trying to create bridges. Bridges not only for reconciliation, but also for dialogue, to get to know each other, to speak with each other. I often say that if we only talk a little bit more with each other, then we might actually discover the humanity of the other that is in us. And in so doing, find it easier to talk to the other, because at the end of the day, you and I are not that different. We've got the same chromosomes, the same number of chromosomes. And we also, if we are believers, we believe that we are created in the image and likeness of God. So in that sense, we should be able to communicate with the other, were it not for the fact of all those beliefs and stereotypes that constantly hamper such dialogue or communication. It is unfortunate that that visit to the Dome of the Rock was not more visible and more prominent, but I'm happy he went there as well. Now, again, we have to put all this in context. The papal pilgrimage, the visit to all those stations in themselves are very important, but they are not solutions. The Pope did not go there to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, nor the Arab-Israeli conflict. He was only there as an ambassador for peace, as a pilgrim walking in the footsteps of Jesus, trying to remind the world of the significance of this small parcel of land to three world religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And at the same time, again, I keep coming, and forgive me for this, James, I hope your readers won't get tired of it, I come back to the same point, because I am one of those Christians of the region, and I know what it means to pray in solidarity with the Christians of the region, to stand in solidarity with the Christians of the region, who are hassled, harassed, harried, sometimes in difficulty. So this was a breath of fresh air. Therefore, I am happy with all those stations, and I think, by and large, again, the fact that he also acknowledged very clearly the clear impact of the Christians of the Galilee when he went to Nazareth, altogether, I think, was significant enough in terms of underlying the importance and the relevance of this pilgrimage to the region.